Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
All right, welcome back to ClickSuasion. We're here with Stephen Dallas. So here are some things we know about Stephen Dallas. Stephen is a graduate of NYU's Stern School of Business with a PhD in marketing. Congratulations. His research examines food decision-making, yum, and behavioral pricing. His research has been published in several journals, also been cited by the U.S. government, and you can find him in Washington Post, Huffington Post, and several other media outlets. Stephen, what don't we know about you?
I think one unique thing about me, so as you said, recently graduated from New York University. I'm a born and raised New Yorker, but I'm moving to Durham, North Carolina to be at Duke University in the fall. And so right now, even though I'm 27 years old, I'm in the process of getting my driver's license. So I'm taking driving lessons and learning how to parallel park and three-point turns. So that's definitely something unique about me and a life skill that I definitely need to develop.
Okay, so here's something. There's actually some synergy here that I did not know. So first, congratulations on your new employment with Duke University. I reside out here towards Durham, North Carolina, and we do a lot of work in Durham. I will not park near you.
Okay, good.
So I'm also a...
better.
Oh, go ahead.
The clearer the road is for me, the better. So...
yes. So there's some traffic in Durham or in the Raleigh-Durham area, but it's nothing compared to what you've experienced in New York. Yeah. I, too, am a native New Yorker. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Bensonhurst to be more specific. Nice. And then I escaped about 20 years ago and I opted for the slower and warmer lifestyle in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. I went to Duke for undergrad, so I'm definitely excited to be back there and to keep doing research. And then I'm also continuing on with education, going to law school there. So trying to move in to a more policy direction so that I'm sure some of the stuff we're going to discuss today can have a hand in actually implementing it and putting it into practical effect.
Okay. Well, let's not leave the listeners on the hook anymore. What is this research on food decision-making?
Yeah. So one of the projects that I've been working on and that recently got accepted for publication in the Journal of Consumer Psychology, which I'm super excited about, has to do with calorie labeling and the effect that calorie labels have on consumers' food choices. Even though calorie labels have been implemented in several jurisdictions, the first was New York City in 2008, actually on May 7th of this year, calorie labeling legislation went into effect nationwide as a part of the Affordable Care Act that Obama and Congress passed in 2010. And so this calorie labeling legislation, the intention is for it to encourage consumers to make lower calorie food choices in an effort to combat the obesity epidemic. But the research that's been conducted up to this point on calorie labeling has shown that it has minimal, if any, effect on consumers' food choices. And a number of different explanations have been proposed for why calorie labeling hasn't been as successful as people anticipated. The most frequently cited explanations are that consumers don't really know how to use the calorie information, and also that they don't really have the motivation to use the calorie information in the way it was intended. But what I recognized, along with my co-authors, was that the way in which calorie information is presented on menus is very consistent. Specifically, calorie information tends to be to the right of the food item's name. So you first see what the food item is, let's say a cheeseburger, and then you see how many calories are in it. So the menu will say, reading from left to right, cheeseburger, 700 calories. And what this made us think, based on a lot of psychological research that's been conducted over the years, is that maybe, one, consumers have already decided whether they're going to order the item or not before they even get to the calorie information, which would lead the calorie information to have little to no effect on consumers' food choices, or they're just not putting much weight on the calorie information. Previous research has shown that information processed earlier in food choices, when information processed earlier, is given greater weight in subsequent decisions. So what this made us think was that maybe if you just move the calorie information to the left of the menu item so that it's the first piece of information that's processed, maybe then consumers will place greater weight on the calorie information when deciding what to order. And we were pretty astonished by the magnitude of the effect of this trivially simple adjustment to the way calorie information was presented, from the right of the menu item to the left. In one of our field studies, we found that it decreased calories ordered by 24%, which is astonishing. And even if that's, you know, larger than the effect of this change would be over the long term, even smaller decreases in the number of calories ordered by this trivial simple switch could lead to very important practical reductions in the number of calories ordered. So very excited about the potential for this very small intervention to lead to healthier, lower calorie food choices among consumers.
Now, how does this work if the person ordering off the menu is from a culture, or if the menu is in a culture that reads the opposite direction from right to left?
Yeah, and that's a great question and something that we were really interested in pursuing. And we thought that, you know, the studies we ran with American consumers were pretty convincing that the order in which the calorie information was processed, when the calorie information was processed, had an effect. But we thought it would be even more compelling and provide even greater evidence that the order in which the calorie information is processed is important and impacts consumers' food choices if we could show the reverse effect among consumers who actually read in the opposite direction. So we actually ran a study with Hebrew-speaking Israelis, a study in Israel, and with Hebrew, you read from right to left. And so based on our explanation for why calorie information to the left leads to lower calorie food orders, this would suggest that for Hebrew-speaking Israelis, calorie information to the right should lead to lower calorie food orders, because when it's in that position, it's processed earlier than when it's to the left. And that's exactly what we found. So among American consumers who read from left to right, found that calorie information to the left led to lower calorie food orders, but among Hebrew-speaking Israelis, calorie information to the right led to lower calorie food orders because the calorie information's processed sooner when it's in that position, and found that relative to calorie information to the left, that this led to an over 9% decrease in number of calories ordered. So again, showing that this very simple intervention, everyone is presented with the exact same information. The only change is where it's presented, and as a result, when in the food decision-making process it's processed. And we find that this has a really potentially meaningful effect on consumers' food choices.
So I'm really curious to learn how food choice decisions are affected if the person's ordering alone or with another person. What can you share about that?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the social context has an effect on consumers' food orders. When you see someone else making an indulgent food choice, choosing that cheeseburger, then it's likely that you'll probably also make an indulgent food choice. And on the other hand, if you're with someone who is making a healthier food choice, well, this may make you think, you know what? Maybe I should make a healthier food choice now as well. But what we found was that across all participants, regardless of participants' BMI, age, gender, that the positioning of the calorie information had an effect. So if you're ordering with someone and the types of restaurants that are most likely to have calorie information are fast food restaurants where you order at a counter. If you're with someone and the first person who's ordering decides because of, or at least is influenced more by the calorie information, went to the left, and that leads them to make a slightly lower calorie food choice, well, then the other person who's ordering, the person who's with them, may also follow their lead and choose something lower in calories. But in all of our studies, we did only look at individual consumers ordering for themselves. And so it'd be really interesting to run more studies in which we look at the social dynamic and how the presence of other people could influence people's food choices. But I'll just say that in that first study that I cited where you had American consumers, it was at a casual chain restaurant on a college campus, and we found that calories to the left led to a 24% decrease in calories ordered. There, they were surrounded by other people, whereas in some of our other studies where we actually found slightly smaller effects, they weren't surrounded by other people. They were making the choices essentially in isolation. So this would even suggest that the effects of the calorie labeling positioning may even be amplified in the social context, which is most likely to occur in these different restaurants.
I could probably see that. It's similar to those breakfast meetings where you don't actually eat breakfast because you don't want to appear to be stuffing your face where you're supposed to be prim and proper. I would probably be subject to that as well. I would probably say, you know what, the person next to me or the person I'm with eats healthy or appears to be in shape, so I'm probably going to choose a salad or a lower calorie item than the other choices.
Definitely. I think we are social beings. We make these choices in social context. And so we're definitely considering what other people are doing and how other people are judging our choices and our behavior. So there's no doubt that those different beliefs, thoughts influence these food choices. That being said, though, you see on an everyday basis people going into McDonald's, TGI Fridays, Burger King, all these different fast food restaurants and loading up. So there definitely are individual differences that would influence people's susceptibility or the extent to which they're influenced by the presence or absence of other people.
So are you judging us for loading up on carbs and fast food?
Well, so the funny thing about all this research and what initially got me interested in food decision-making research is that I know the research. I know the foods that I should be eating, but yet it's so difficult. It's so difficult to make those healthier food choices. You get into the restaurant and you smell the aromas of the French fries, and you know you may have gone in with the best of intentions, but instead you go for the fries. So to a large extent, the research that I've been conducting is sort of selfishly trying to understand more about myself. So there is certainly no judgment at all because I make the same mistakes that everyone does. And we are in environments typically that sort of push people in the direction of making these higher calorie, less healthy, higher carb food choices.
Which food establishment is your guilty pleasure?
So coming from New York City, definitely it's not one specific establishment, but certainly slices of pizza. It is difficult to, when you have an empty stomach and you go past one of these pizza joints and you just smell the cheese and the aroma, it is very, very enticing. And far too often, I am drawn in, even though that was not my intention.
Once you get down here, I'll share with you a few places in the Raleigh dorm area that have decent or good New York pizza.
It's tough to find outside of New York City, so
it absolutely is. So I was in Chicago not too long ago. Don't judge my eating habits. And I had Chicago, of course, when in Rome or when in Chicago, you eat deep dish pizza. And that cheese pull, it's like a foot long and the cheese, and it's just mouthwatering. It's like, why would I choose a salad when this delicious looking item of pizza is in my face? Of course, I'm going to go with the pizza every time. I don't care what the calories say. I'm going to stuff my face with it.
I mean, so for you being in Chicago, there's some other research that shows that, you know, for special occasions or when it seems like this is a limited opportunity, well, then those calories don't count. Obviously, you're going to go for the deep dish pizza. Because, you know, maybe that's not something that's offered all that often. And it's just so enticing. It's so appealing. And so one thing I don't want the takeaway from this to be is that you always need to eat healthy and you always need to pass up, you know, that mouth-watering deep dish pizza. But the issue is that far too frequently we choose the indulgent, high-calorie, less healthy option, foregoing a healthier option. But indulging every once in a while, I think, is important, and I don't think life would be as rich or as enjoyable if we just always made the healthy choice. So I hope you enjoyed the pizza.
Absolutely delicious. So would you say this is, say, quasi mental accounting for calories or quasi mental food accounting?
I would say that the specific research that I was talking about is more just about information processing and less about people, you know, keeping track of the calories, and that when it's to the left, you know, people are able to account for it more. I think it's more, you know, you go into a restaurant and you look at the menu and you look at an item. And if the first piece of information that you see is 1500 calories, which at a lot of these restaurants, especially some of these casual sit-down places like Applebee's and TGI Fridays, a lot of the items are that high in calories. When it's to the left and the first piece of information you see is 1500 calories, well, then you're like, there's no way I'm going to order that because I'll have a heart attack. And then you see, oh, it's the, you know, double bacon cheeseburger. You say, darn, like, that sounds really good. But in your mind, you've already decided that you're not going to order it because you saw how many calories are in it. Whereas when it's to the right, which is the way it typically is, and you see double bacon cheeseburger, you're like, wow, that sounds amazing. I'm going to order that. And then you get to 1500 calories and you're like, you know what? I've worked hard. I had a salad a couple of weeks ago. So I deserve this juicy, tasty cheeseburger. And so it's less about accounting for the calories in my mind, but more about just when the information is processed and because of when it's processed, the extent to which it influences the food choice.
So Stephen recommends one salad every few weeks. Is that right?
No. I would say, you know, a little bit more frequently than that. But I think that's how a lot of people think about these things.
So you've said that it's premature to call food – it's premature to call calorie labeling a failed policy. Could you share some insight?
Sure. So, I mean, as I said a little bit earlier, a lot of research has come out which suggests that calorie labels just don't have much of an effect on consumers' food choices. And so a lot of pundits and others came out and were like, well, clearly calorie labeling is a failed policy. It hasn't achieved its goal of reducing caloric intake. And based off the evidence base that we currently have, you know, those who are calling it a failed policy, you know, would be well within their right to draw that conclusion from the knowledge base. But based on this research, which shows us this trivially simple change to the way in which calorie information is presented can have this substantial effect on consumers' food orders and can actually lead calorie information to have the effect it was intended to have, shows that instead of just plopping the information on menus and believing that consumers are going to use it in the way it was intended, we need to think more about the underlying psychology and about how consumers process information. And when we think about those things, we recognize that this very simple change to the way calorie information is presented can actually lead it to have the effect it was intended to have in the first place. So instead of just saying, you know what, calorie labels don't work, let's just give up on this policy, instead, based on this research, maybe we should, you know, keep giving calorie information a chance and don't count it out quite yet. Instead, let's move it to the left of menu items. So that's the first piece of information people process, and then see if it has the effect that it was intended to have in the first place. Based on the research I've conducted, it will. The effects may be slightly smaller than what I've found in my studies, but it will have an impact. And so let's not count it out quite yet. Let's give it a chance to actually have the effect it was intended to have in the first place. But what I will say is that, you know, this menu labeling, calorie information on menus will not solve the obesity epidemic. This is a relatively small change, and much more drastic steps need to be taken to really get at the root cause of the obesity epidemic. But given that governments have chosen calorie labeling as one of their preferred policy tools for trying to reduce excess consumption of calories, well, let's give it a real chance to be successful. And this research suggests a very simple way to increase the odds that it will be successful.
I think you have something there. You know, you and I both know that behavior change is challenging and it's tough. And as we both know, we have indulgences of fast food or pizza. So to quit eating those kind of things or to lose weight is very tough and challenging. But the research or the implementation and, you know, putting into practice may not solve the obesity epidemic, but it's one small win to contribute to the larger battle. And I think it's a step in the right direction. So other cultures are likely to reframe calories as energy. Mm-hmm. How do you think reframing the message from calories to energy or vice versa has an effect?
Yeah, I mean, I think that within American culture, because governments have decided that they're going to label calorie information on menus, if you look at the nutrition facts label on packaged foods and beverages, they just updated them. And one change they made was they made the calorie information even more salient, larger font, just sort of in your face when you turn over a product, bag of chips, you see the calorie information. And so I think that they've done a pretty good job of creating a negative association between calories and basically being saying that calories are something that should be avoided. And so calories in American culture has a relatively negative connotation, whether just limiting the number of calories consumers eat on a regular basis is going to be the key to solving obesity is something that's been controversial and been up for debate. But because of the way calories have really been targeted in anti-obesity interventions within the United States, calories have this negative connotation. On the other hand, if you changed it so that instead of labeling it as calories, as energy, I think for a lot of American, which is the case, as you said, in a lot of other nations and in other cultures, but my intuition, and I don't have any data to back this up, But my intuition is that, you know, energy has a relatively positive connotation. We need energy. We want energy. We like energetic people who go out and do things. Energy gives us the ability to do what it is we need to do. And so I think if we relabeled and used the term energy instead of calories, it would have a really negative impact, because I think people would just want more and more energy, which is what consumers are doing with calories and excessive consumption of calories. But I think saying energy would, you know, license consumers to eat even more, because how could having more energy be bad?
So what's next for food decision-making research?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that needs to be done from a more public policy, public health perspective. Figuring out how to reduce consumption of fast food, of sugary beverages among, you know, consumers in general, but specifically among children and adolescents, is extremely important. And trying to figure out what levers we can pull to lead these consumers, those who potentially might be most vulnerable to marketing from different soda companies and fast food outlets, what levers we can pull to help them make healthier food choices in the face of this onslaught of marketing saying that these high calorie foods and beverages are, you know, fun and are part of American culture. And so I think that's absolutely key to try and figure out what interventions can be implemented in order to help specifically vulnerable communities make healthier food choices and, you know, consume more water instead of consuming sugary beverages. And then I think another area which is really important is on-package labeling. And there has been a lot of work that's been done on-package labeling, but some of the labels that are used are very misleading and have even become topics of debate within legal circles. The one that comes to mind is the natural label and labeling different products as natural, including natural ingredients. And the research that I've done and that others have done has shown the huge impact, the major impact that these labels have on consumers' food choices. Some of the research that I've done has looked at the local label. When you label a food product as local, what impact does that have on consumers? And previous research has shown that in general, consumers think there's a negative correlation between how healthy and how tasty a product is, believing that healthier products are less tasty and tastier products are less healthy. But what we found is with local products, people perceive these as both healthier and tastier than non-local products, because local products are perceived as fresh, and freshness is positively associated with both taste and health. And so it's my intuition that the natural label will have a similar impact on consumers, leading them to think that the product's likely to be tastier and healthier than if it didn't involve that label. And this can have significant consequences for consumers. If they think a product's healthier, they tend to eat more of it. And so making sure that consumers know what these labels mean and that these labels are only applied to products that actually contain those features, I think is really important. But understanding more about how these different labels, how different interventions influence consumers, I think is the most important direction for food decision-making researchers going forward.
Going forward, if any of the listeners want to contact you to buy you pizza, or just to ask you which highway you're going to be on so they know which highway to avoid, how could they get in contact with you?
Definitely can reach me by email. My email address is sdallas, S And then Dallas is like the city in Texas at Stern, stern.nyu.edu. And would love to hear any thoughts about the research I discussed today or any ideas about ongoing research.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle at ClickSuasion.